The Commanders had a busy offseason. They brought in a bevy of veterans to help upgrade the roster. Javon Kinlaw, Von Miller, Jonathan Jones, Will Harris, Dietrich Wise, Eddie Goldman, Jacob Martin, all on the defensive side of the ball. And it was Harris, the safety, formerly of the New Orleans Saints, who I caught up with after practice today to talk about his first workout on the field in camp with his brand new team.
Kind of like back to school day, first day here with the new organization at training camp. How did everything go?
Oh, it went amazing. It went amazing. You know, it's always good to get back on the grass with the guys, get back to playing football. You know what I mean? Had a good break. You know, came in here during OTAs, competed, and excited to get back out here and continue that and lean into that standard that we have here and continue to build that every day.
When you hit the market this offseason, what kind of things were you looking for in a new team, and how did Washington separate themselves?
You know, to be honest, man, I was attracted. I was attracted here, man, from the beginning, man. I love, like I said, you know, the standard that we have here, the things that we, that we kind of lean into here, the way guys play for each other here, that love in the building, like everything. You know what I mean? It was a perfect fit, and I wish, you know, it would have happened soon. You know, it would happen soon. You know, this culture that we have here, you can't fake that. You can't duplicate that. You know what I mean? So I'm blessed, you know, for the opportunity to be here, and I'm excited to get this team, you know, everything I have.
Was that something you noticed from afar, like in the conference? You guys played them, obviously, in New Orleans last year. You know that now from being here, but could you tell just from playing against them?
100%. I mean, that's something, like I said, you can't fake that. So, you know, even on game day on the field, that's something that you could, you know, that's tangible. You could see it, you could feel it, you know, you could hear it, you know, guys communicating, guys barking left and right, you know, guys playing with passion, guys playing with that dog, and you know what I mean? And so, and most importantly, guys playing for each other. Like, you know, after great plays, after not so great plays. I mean, guys rally around each other, you know, more than I've ever seen, you know, before. So I'm lucky, and I'm very blessed, beyond blessed, to be a part of this.
New Commander safety Will Harris, Aaron Grant and Danny. Obviously, the safety positions changed so much over the years that you guys now do a little bit of both. I'm old enough to remember when you were a strong safety or a free safety, right?
No doubt.
But with you and Quan, how do you kind of see the tandem working, and how do you guys play off each other with your skill sets?
Right. I mean, it's amazing because, you know, the coaches do a great job of putting us, in good positions. Whatever they need from us, we're down to do. You know, every guy in this building, you know, in the DB room, I can speak for. You know, every guy's willing to do the task. You know, whatever that may be, it's our job to come out here and give it 100% in the work and the grind and the study, and then. We take the guidance from, you know, the coaches and the game plan and run with it. And it's fun, man, being out there with, you know, with the guys. So
you're known as one of the more physical players in the league at your position. In an era where contact is frowned upon in some ways, how do you go about that being your image and also toeing that line?
Well, I think it's all about, you know, technique. It's all about proper technique. If you have your technique in line, you guys stay, especially now more than ever, you guys stay cognizant of that for, you know, everyone else's safety and also my safety. You know, making sure that you're playing with proper technique, keeping your head up, keeping your head out of the tackle. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, we got pads on. This is, you know, this is what we sign up for. You know what I mean? It's a physical game. It's a grueling game. And, you know, that's the part I love about it the most. You know what I mean? You can't fake that either. So as long as football still got pads, man, you're going to hear them from me. So as long as we got pads on, man, we clacking, man. That's all I know. So I'm excited about that.
Lastly, fans getting to know you a little bit for the first time. I'm going to just go rapid fire with some get-to-know-you questions here for our listeners. Favorite food, like, you know, last meal type food.
Ooh wee. I'm gonna have to go a good steak. Yeah, for sure.
Last show or movie that you binged?
Squid Games was crazy. Yeah. That was a crazy one. I got through that one in like a day.
Who's your actor of choice?
Ooh, man. Tom Hardy. I like Tom Hardy.
Have you seen Lawless? I think it was called, where they're like the old bootleggers, these fighting dudes.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen that, but one of my favorite movies, he had a movie where he was playing himself, like he was playing like twin brothers with himself. I forgot what that movie was called, but it was
Michael B. Jordan just did that too.
Yeah, exactly. Sinners was a great movie
that
too.
Was good.
Watch that. That was an amazing one.
If you could take a skill set from another player in the league or part of their game, what would you take?
Ooh, would take, Man, I would, I plan to do this. I want to take some of these pass rush moves off some of these guys up here, man. It look cool, man. These dudes, especially, you know, you got all these guys in front of me, man. They're technicians and, you know, in the pass rush. And, you know, I got my stuff, I got my tools, but it would be cool to, you know, be able to get on them bags with them guys and do what they do. So, but definitely going to be working on that too, just because it's just good, you know, good to train.
Appreciate you. Welcome to DC.
No doubt. I appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Put that Will Harris answer about as long as we got these pads on, they're going to be popping. Hang that in the Louvre for me. I loved that. I like his makeup, his personality. I'm excited about what he's going to bring physically to the back end of the defense. My questions are just based on talking to all the Saints reporters we had on. What kind of cover option is he going to be? How will he do in space when that happens? But when you bring him down in the box, I think you're going to feel him.
That's the idea, right? I don't know that you replicate all the playmaking that Jeremy Chinn had without starting to pay a pretty penny for that. They've shown they don't really want to do that at the safety spot, right? Whether it was letting Cam Curl walk or letting Chinn go after successful runs for both of those guys. He's here basically to be a linebacker and a half. Like, he's coming downhill. He's there to hit. If you're an offensive mind, you're going to try to expose him in coverage a little bit. But, you know, it's up to Witt and Quinn and company not to allow that to happen.
Remember, you can always text us on the Lido Pizza text line, 1-800-636-1067. Standard message and data charges may apply. We should be joined shortly by Sal Capaccio from Buffalo. Let's talk Von Miller and more with him. I'm sure he's readying for Bills training camp as the reporters for the Commanders are doing the same here in Washington.
I mean, obviously, it's a loaded question because we have no idea. But if I put the over-under on sacks at 5 for Von Miller, because you know he's going to play a limited role. He played a limited role last year. He's, you know, at the end of his career. Where would you go on that? Knowing his pass rush win rate was actually fairly high last year, in a lot of the metrics, he did okay.
I'd cross my fingers and go for the over because he had 6 last year in Buffalo. 2023, he must have been injured. He had 0 sacks.
Yeah.
And then he had 8 sacks his first year in Buffalo. Now, he is 36 years old.
Yeah.
So he is slowing down. So he's going to be used in limited capacity.
It was limited capacity last
year. Over 5, I think that's the smart money.
I kind of changed my tune when I saw ESPN's Next Gen Stats get off numbers. And I know you brought up some numbers. He was faster than a couple of prominent pass rushers.
That's why they signed him. That's why they gave him, I mean, you could say it's insignificant, but they gave him like $7 million.
Yeah.
6.1 can make up to like 10.5.
I know the NFL
incentives.
That's nothing, but it's something.
Sure.
They could have given that money to Terry.
Look, at 36 to still be making 6 with the potential to make 10 is pretty good.
So I think that means they're gonna play him a little bit.
His player prop is 7+ at -120.
It is. So I threw it at 5. So 5, you got to go over.
I think Nicky Javala tweeted a few days ago when he was signed, if he hits that $10 million, I think he'll become the first NFL player, defensive player, to crest $200 million in earnings.
What a career. And again, I told you the day they signed him, I liked it. Obviously, you liked the name. But I liked it because I know in my lifetime, there have been older pass rushers that have put up, you know, double digits. Now, those guys typically played more than what he's going to play as far as snaps, but I'm okay with it. Like, I think he'll be a contributor.
I still don't like that he's wearing 24. Do not like it. It's not a good look for an outside linebacker or pass rusher.
I think
he's
going to look sexy as hell in 24.
I just don't like it.
I think he's going to look amazing.
I just don't like it.
I think I'm tainted by the Bruce Smith era in Washington. And I know that was so long ago.
You got to get past that.
That didn't work. But if you look at other guys and what they've done, the Kevin Greens, there's just been a ton of guys. I listed them at the time. I could do the research again.
I feel like DeMarcus Ware was really good.
Now, if it were one of Dan Snyder's cronies from 25 years ago making this selection and bringing him in, then I'd have a raised eyebrow.
I think we talked about this at the time, but the interesting anecdote is he and Ryan Kerrigan were drafted in the same class, and Kerrigan's going to be coaching him.
Right.
Presumably. I think he's still on the staff, right?
Yeah, he is.
Ryan Kerrigan is borderline unrecognizable.
Oh, he's so skinny.
Yeah. He's so thin.
So svelte.
Yeah.
All right, let's head out to the Rude guest hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. Say good morning to Sal Capaccio, Buffalo Bills beat and sideline reporter for WGR Sports Radio 550 AM in Buffalo. What's up, Sal? Thanks for the time.
Yeah, you got it, guys. Happy training camp week for everybody.
Yeah, same to you. Now, I saw that you snuck in an overseas trip to Italy with about 30 people on your Twitter, at Sal Sports. That's a good trip to take right before training camp.
It was amazing. In fact, this actually was something our company did. It was a promotion. Go to Italy with Sal Capaccio. And we actually had a lot of listeners who said, yeah, I want to do that. I'm a Bills fan. I want to hang out and, you know, talk Bills and go to Italy. So when they first approached me, they said, you can do Portugal or Ireland or Italy. I'm like, my name is Sal Capaccio. What do you want me to do? Yeah, let's go to Italy, right?
Probably smart.
Yeah, it was a great trip. We were there for about 10 days. I went to 7 different cities, and everything from Rome to Venice to Lake Como. It was absolutely awesome. And then, of course, you come right back, and then training camp starts right away. So it never stops.
Yeah. So how would you grade the Von Miller, you know, 3-year stint there in Buffalo?
It was probably, depending on what, like how the scale, the grade, I would say disappointing for a lot of people because of, I think, the injury that happened. Right.
Right.
Listen, let me walk you through the timeline though. The Bills, you know, they obviously signed Von Miller in that first year. He was so good, guys. He was literally playing to me like one of the best defenders in the NFL. Where did the Bills sign him? $20 million a year, 6 years, right? It was this big contract. Oh, my God. But they needed a closer. They were right there. They were ready to win a Super Bowl. They had to get to Patrick Mahomes. It didn't happen the year before in 2021 with 13 seconds left. That was a big deal. And he was playing at that level. And then they go on Thanksgiving. They go to Detroit. He tears his ACL. And it just really stunk to not have him on the field. And, of course, at his age, comes back the next year. And everybody thought he'd be ready, but he truly wasn't. And he just wasn't the same player the next year in 2023. So it kind of took him a full year plus to really recover. And then last year, he became a part-time player. And he wasn't that bad last year, to be quite honest, but it just wasn't the same player they were getting early on. So there's a lot of ways you can massage it. I mean, of course, it was disappointing in the end, but I think a lot of that simply was because of the injury he suffered.
Now, what is he like as a teammate? How is he received in the locker room? We know he's had some pretty high-profile off-the-field incidents, but what is he like? What was he like as a teammate in Buffalo? What can we expect
there
in Washington?
People say he's great. I've heard great.
Listen, he really is a great teammate. I mean, I don't think anybody would question that. I think that's one of the reasons the Bills brought him to Buffalo. You know, the Bills, again, they're a team that during this window where they're trying to win a Super Bowl, they needed guys who could really come in and help them do that, but not, you know, tear this team down. And this is Von Miller. The great story is when Von Miller came to Buffalo, two things. Number one, he walked into the field house. There's an embedded video. You could watch the Bills put it out. They were giving him the tour of facility. He walks into the field house and they said, hey, here's our AFC championship banners, right? We don't have any Super Bowl banners in Buffalo. And he looks up and there's four of them sitting there and he goes, yeah, we got to get that Super Bowl one up there, right? That's what we're going to do. Like, it just was, he was dialed in like, okay, this is what I'm here to do. He knew it. Mm-hmm. And apparently, like, right away, one of the very first ever meetings they had with the team, he brought in like a replica Lombardi and he put it down on the table and he said, this is what we're here for. Like, he right away wanted everybody to know, hey, this is why we're here. This is what we're doing. And then, guys, I mean, he's really great with the media. He's actually very long-winded. You know, a lot of these guys, they give short answers. That's not Von Miller. Von wants to talk to you. And I don't know if it's known out there already, but you'll learn it. Von wants to be an NFL general manager. Like, that's a goal of his in life.
Wow.
And he is very much a student of the game and history of the game. He watches the league, around the league, and it's really interesting to talk to him about stuff like that.
All right, so let's talk about the Bills, though. I'm curious. You know, they've been so close. Everyone kind of assumed, right, correct me if I'm wrong, but maybe last year there would be a drop-off because maybe lose some of the weapons, but, of course, Josh Allen's so good. It didn't really happen. Are people...
James Cook's good, too.
Are expectations, like, even higher, or are people kind of feeling like that they've plateaued? What's the feeling there in Buffalo?
I think the expectations are exactly what they have been for the last, let's say, 2 to 3 years, which is this team needs to win a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they have the parts to win the Super Bowl. They have the league MVP. He's in his prime. They're set up. They have a great roster. They have a front office that's, you know, great at what they do. Coaching staff, they've all been together. They're on the same page. Ownership, coaching, front office. I mean, they've been together 8 years now. They've had this quarterback here who's been at the top of the league for a while. There's nothing left to do. That's it. You got to win the Super Bowl. And the interesting thing is, you're right. Last year, they kind of ripped the Band-Aid off a year early, mm-hmm. which is to say they had these guys who were transitioning out. They were aging out. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, obviously the trade of Stephon Diggs, Mitch Morse, and they moved on. Saran Neal, even, like guys in special teams that mattered. And people said, okay. And Tre'Davious White, remember they released him. He's back now. Mm-hmm. But all these guys. And people said, okay, they're going to take a step back. So much so, guys, the team that was favored in Vegas to win the East last year was the New York Jets at one point before the season. Mm-hmm. Right? Not the Buffalo Bills. But lo and behold, the Buffalo Bills come back out and they're maybe even better than they have been. Because what they did along the way was they kind of transitioned the way they play a little bit. They kept Josh Allen healthy. Obviously, he's been healthy throughout his career. And they have some good young players. And then what'd they do this offseason? Because they got ahead of it a year early, they locked up all their very young good players, which is Christian Benford, Terrell Bernard, Greg Rousseau, Khalil Shakir. They all sign extensions. So this is the next phase of the Bills. The Bills believe, I think the way they've structured their team, they have 5 years of Josh Allen in his prime to try and win at least one Super Bowl, and that's what they're trying to do. And that's what the expectation is here. And there's only one thing left to do in the regular season they haven't done, and that's get the one seed. And I think that's what the goal is, to get that one seed, not play that first round, and have two games at home.
Yeah, and not have to play in Kansas City.
Right. Now, look, they did lose in Buffalo to Kansas City.
They did. You're right. Yeah.
And they did lose in Cincinnati, which I think was a little different. That was after the DeMar Hamlin stuff. It was just that team was exhausted with everything that happened. But, you know, you go back. Why did they lose to Kansas City at home a couple years ago? I could make a strong argument that, boy, they were depleted. They were having A.J. Klein cover, you know, Travis Kelce around the field. But why did that happen? Because they didn't have the one seed. They had to play that first week, and they had two games where they were beat up. So it's not excuses. It's just a better path and a better way to do it.
Who scares you more in the AFC, KC or Baltimore?
Oh, it's KC for sure for the Buffalo Bills. I mean, the Bills have shown they can beat Baltimore. They beat them in the playoffs last year. They beat them in the playoffs in 2020. Yes, I think on the surface, you look at the teams and how they, you know, how they're structured. Of course, Baltimore can scare anybody. They have Lamar Jackson, and they do a great job of running the ball, and the Bills have had trouble with that. But it's the ghost of Kansas City. I mean, this is how the Bills season has ended in three of the last 4 years. They beat Kansas City in the regular season. They lose in the playoffs. So when you say scared, I think if you have, obviously Bills fans would love the storyline. This is the last year of the stadium, by the way, right? Highmark Stadium. Mm. If you could write the script of how the stadium ends, it's beating the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game at home. But if you gave Bills fans an option, who would you actually play, not knowing the result? I think they'd rather play the Baltimore Ravens because there's so much scar tissue with the Chiefs.
How far is the new stadium from the current stadium?
About 500 yards.
Oh, really? It's right
across
there.
The street. It's right across the street. Nothing's changing with their team facility, their offices, their practice field. They'll still do that. But literally, guys, they're just going to walk across the street to the new stadium. And, you know, this stadium is 50-plus years old. You know, it goes back to watching O.J. Simpson run, right? I mean, the early 70s. And, you know, it's a great stadium for the charm, and there's not a bad seat, but it's old. There's one tunnel in, one tunnel out. This new stadium is going to be fantastic. It's not a dome. People wonder why the Bills wouldn't build a dome. Well, let's start with another extra $500 million. That's number one reason why. But number two is, look, I mean, playing football in Buffalo outdoors is something that, you know, people – hold deer here, and do have a canopy. They do have a canopy, and people will be able to stay warm and out of the elements, but the field will not be totally covered.
It's an advantage for the Bills. I mean, the Ravens
play in cold weather too, but Buffalo's on another level. Yeah. I mean, those guys looked miserable.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's something that, you know, people still want to be a part of. Look, there's a lot of Bills fans here who still believe they should have built a dome. I totally get that. I'm the sideline reporter. I mean, in December, I like playing in domes. I get it, right? But yes, I think that's an advantage. And when you have a quarterback like Josh Allen, who honestly, like, he can play in any weather, his arm is strong enough to cut through any wind or any snow, it does become even more of an advantage, I think.
You know, I'm just looking at your schedule. I'm just jealous. And I mean, don't take this the wrong way. I'm just an idiot. It means nothing to what I think. But as a Skins fan, I'm looking at this going, man, I wish I had this schedule. Now, I don't want to play the Ravens. I don't want to play the Chiefs. Like, there's three or four teams there that I don't really want to play. But where does that schedule rank, by the way?
It's actually, if you think about and you look at the other teams they play outside of those big four, Baltimore, Philadelphia, Kansas City, and Cincinnati, the Bills have one of the winning percentage-wise easiest, lowest winning percentage of opponents. Because let's remember, two games against the Patriots, two games against the Dolphins, two games against the Jets.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. I'm so jealous.
Hmm. Yeah, I would say this, guys. I mean, obviously, as opposed to the division that your team is in Washington.
Yeah.
You'd probably agree with me and you say, if I gave you one team that would have the best shot to win their division this year, wouldn't you say the Bills, right?
Well, I'm looking at this, teams? I'm going, you guys are going to win, I don't know, 13, 14 games again. I mean,
And that's where it comes in. Let's go back to what I said earlier. This is, to me, set up to do the one thing they haven't done. They have not gotten the one seed. And look, last year they were just on the Chiefs' heels all year, and they even beat them. But man, the Chiefs just kept winning those close games. They went in those lucky ways, or whatever you want to put it, and the Bills couldn't catch them, which is why they had to go to Kansas City for the AFC Championship game. And the big advantage of this schedule, take a look at that schedule. Something that, I don't know if you've noticed, but if you do, it's pretty wild. I've never really seen this. And I've been, you know, covering this team, the Bills, for over a decade. I've been on the sidelines for 12 years now. The Bills have one game, one, outside the Eastern time zone, and that's in Central time zone in Houston. That's it. There is very little travel. The routine of every week and not having to travel long will play very well with players and coaches.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Sal, thanks for the time, man. We really appreciate it. Enjoy training camp. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, you guys got it. Thanks a lot.
Yep, that's Sal Capaccio, Buffalo Bills beat and sideline reporter for WGR Sports Radio 550 AM. We're the Junks. We'll be right back.
6-7 The Fan. Pat Leonard joined us yesterday, right?
Yeah.
Or was that 2 days ago? Yesterday we had a short show. So it was Tuesday. Tuesday, Pat Leonard from the New York Daily News came on the program and said, I'd watch for Dexter Lawrence. That's somebody they want to really take care of. Ian Rappaport just tweeted out, the Giants have rewarded star defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence, adding $3 million in incentives to his current deal for 2025. Lawrence is set to make $17 million this season, plus the newly negotiated incentives. After another stellar season, the Giants do right by their Pro Bowler.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds about right, right?
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. Watching that is pretty impressive. Lawrence is a stud, gets it done at a really high level. You got to pay him, man. You got to pay him. Also, just because, like, Nats fans love coming at me. Let me point something out real quick before we get to Frankie Luvu. The Nats just signed their fifth rounder, Coy James, way ahead of slot. Highest bonus ever for a fourth rounder. So, B, when we talked about when they took Willits instead of Holiday or the big pitcher, they were saying, well, they wanted to be able to spread it around a little bit more. Looks like they're actually doing that.
Okay.
That's great. That does not change my contention that the organization is cheap. If you read this article that Tom Boswell wrote earlier in the week, I believe, about the Learners need to sell the team, they don't invest in scouting, they don't invest in R&D, they don't invest in analytics.
They don't like the pay managers.
Yeah, they have.
It's kind of hard to win like that, dog.
Among the lowest payrolls in baseball. So, like, if you want to celebrate that they went over slot for the fourth rounder, you are correct, and that's great. But, like, they're cheap as hell. I don't know what to tell you. I just think that's pretty damn obvious. But congrats to Coy James. I hope he hits 30 home runs. B, Frankie Luvu has really changed a lot for the Commanders organization. He's just such a great dude, and then he's balled out last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Frankie's just a guy that fans really enjoy, too. Did you notice that it's Frankie's picture on the banner when he walked down?
Yeah.
I think Frankie kind of mentioned that meant
guys like that who has that natural energy, even without them expecting it, it happens because people know. When you see people talking about Frankie, they're enthusiastic as hell. That's how he plays.
Right.
So,
yesterday I got to sit down and talk to Frankie Luvu. Here we go. Always appreciate getting to talk to Frankie Luvu. Pretty big honor in the last week or so here, NFL Top 100. Considering your journey to where you are now, what did that mean for you? That's voted on by the players, dude.
Yeah.
That's not media.
No. To have respect from the players and, you know, love for the game and to see that, man, it's just a testimony of how hard work and grit and just, you know, your routine and everything that I put into this game just coming to fruition. On the island, man, I used to watch that, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes we don't watch it because you don't have cable. Sometimes I go to the neighbor's house, they catch on at the top 100 players, and to be even recognized to be one of them, you know, I'm just, it's an honor, man. And it don't stop, man. It's to me, I'm speechless, you know what I mean? Because I did a post just a few hours ago yesterday saying, man, if you would have asked me 10 years ago if I would be in the position I am today, I would tell you no. But man, God has been so good. He blessed me and my family, and just having that faith in him and you know, kind of him leading the way of my faith and spirituality with him, man, I'm just blessed to be in the position I am today.
It's also the hard work you put in.
Correct.
And you obviously do it. How did you find out about the NFL Top 100? Who called?
Bro, PR Jared, he hit me up like that morning. To be honest, I didn't even know I was going to be on there. I was
like, because Bobby made it, which
yeah, Bobby I'm like, Bobby always made it. Right. You know what I mean? The GOAT. So right. When Jared hit me up that morning, he's like, congrats. And I pulled up on messages, and it was like, you know, the 70th. I'm like, man, I just, you know, I told my girl, bro, my wife, I'm like, man, it's crazy. You know what I mean? I just took that moment in, and just, man, it's like full circle. You know, just embracing where I was at in the beginning and where I'm at now and further on down where I see myself from 10 years from now. But to have that, you know, milestone for me, man, it's a huge accomplishment for me. But, you know, I ain't never settled for that. You know, the job ain't done. The job ain't finished. And, you know, hopefully I can go for number 10 or number one this year.
You talked about being a kid on the island trying to watch that. Sometimes you did, sometimes you didn't. What do you think you are doing for kids looking up now?
Man,
just, not that you're alone, but
right.
you've accomplished something significant.
Just mainly back home on the islands. I say, you know, I'm that voice for them, and I'm that resource for them. And, you know, we got talent back on the island, not only back on the island, but here in the mainland. You know, I got kids that's next year looking up, and, you know, that's all I'm about, man. I'm blessed to be a blessing to others. You know, and that's my testament, that's my calling. And, you know, we have talent back home. It's just the amount of resources that we need back home and whatnot, so forth. But, you know, that the image I try to put out and the work that I try to put in, man, there's no shortcuts. Everything you got to go through, the stormy weather, the rainy days, you know, and then when the bright lights are on, you know, you're prepared and your preparation comes to work. And that's all I'm, that's my movement and that's the way I walk.
Speaking of talent, what do you think of the squad?
Man.
Some new faces, some big guys.
Big guys, new faces, good energy. And just, man, there's a lot of talent. Right now, man, we're just putting piece by piece together. We're building our foundation. You know, what we had last year was last year. This year, we're focused on one step at a time, one day at a time, one meeting at a time, man. Just make the most out of whatever we're in. If it's meetings, if it's walkthroughs, if it's practice, like get the most out of it that day. You know, just don't go walk, just don't go about a day like, you know, it's one of them days, or kind of wake up with your piss hot and, you know, kind of got your mind right. Like you already, first thing I'm fixing my bed, man. Like that's a win for me. You know what I mean? I come pee in a hydration little test thing and it's green. Like that's the second win for me. You know, so DQ right. talks about that a lot. Like just count your wins, you know, individually. And when you come as a team together, not everybody, you know, when they like greens, to using that analogy, it's like, man, we all go, you know, right. It's time to go. So, man, we got, man, I'm excited. I'm excited with the talent we got, man, but we just got to put in the work right now.
What about, I mean, this just happened 3 days ago. Mm-hmm. What about adding Von Miller?
Man, adding him to the game and just working with him at one-on-ones with Kerrigan. Man, he's very technique with and fundamental and sound with his preparation, how he practices. And, man, to me as a player, man, I'm just a sponge. You know, that's how I was with Bobby last year. I'm a sponge, you know, picking up with him. With Zach, now with Vaughn, it's like, man, you got so much of this experience with the group and so much knowledge for the game. Why not go out and search for that extra, you know, step or extra, you know, thing to get better at? But, man, I'm just blessed to have him on my team and our team.
Sure.
And, you know, get this thing going.
Who's bigger, Wise or Kinlaw? Those are some big fellas.
Man, it's big in a different way. Wise is more tall.
Right. You can interpret it however you want.
Yeah. Wise is bigger as far as, like, he's tall, like, you know, wide base. And then Kinlaw, bro, he just top, bottom, like, he's
these are big fellas,
big boy,
man.
Bro. And
how will that impact you guys as the linebackers? With just clearly they made a point to get larger on the D-line.
Yeah, I think it'll help us a lot. You know, with Kinlaw in there, Wise on the edge, setting the edge. You got Payne in there. Man, me and Bobby is
Johnny
just
healthy.
And Johnny healthy. You know, we got a lot of Carl. We got a lot of guys that, you know, not only the ones, you got the twos coming in. And it's a good rotation. Get your breather, get in. But me and Bobby, it's just a tackling field now. Like, it opens up, go get it.
Sure.
And I love the addition that we had to the squad. And, you know, looking forward for camp and how that goes.
So much momentum with everything going on. There is the Terry situation. Have you talked to him at all? Understanding you've been in the league a while. This is a business, too.
Yeah. Me and Terry talk, you know what I mean? But that's, you know, whatever he stands with, I'm with. That's my brother. That's my teammate. And, man, I'm just, you know, hopefully we can get something done. And, you know, I love my boy T, man. I got you, bro.
I love that. What's it like to see Five in year two? He's not a rookie anymore.
Yeah. Nah, you know, Five, he got a different little swag he coming in with this year. You know, he was in the weight room, you know what I mean? He got the sleeves up. He always had the sleeves up, but now it's like, you know, you just know the work he's been put in. And to see him out of practice, he hasn't changed one bit since we signed him. His rookie year last year, he came with the same energy, smiling, laughing around, talking, you know, back and forth with Bobby, you know, calling out plays. It just, that's how he is. And as long as, you know, Jaden just staying being himself, man, he's going to, you know, even elevate what he did from last year. And, you know, guy on defense, man, I'm seeing that and competing against every day. That's the best look I can get. I'm going to give him the best look that he's going to get as a defense. And that's just what makes us, you know, iron sharpen iron. And I'm just excited for Five, man. He's going to be the truth, for real.
Yeah.
He's the truth.
It's remarkable that young man, since the day I met him, has been the exact same dude. And think about where his profile is now. Think about where it was coming into the league.
Correct.
Heisman winner, LSU, and now offensive rookie. I mean, and he's just the same.
Same.
It's remarkable.
Yep.
Last thing. Do you realize how much, like, fans have embraced you here? Like, you are a true fan favorite. Like, what does that mean for you? What's it like when you go to the grocery store or, like, out to dinner? The Caps game?
Oh, man.
How proud of your performance at the Caps game were you?
Man, that was
best beer chug of everybody.
Man, man, it was probably one of the best. It was my second hockey game, but it was the best hockey game I've been at. And the environment and just D.C., man. This is the type of environment that when you start winning and you care about the game and then the fans pouring into as well, it's like, why not? You know what I mean? Show love for them. But the amount of love that I got and for me and my family, man, this is tremendous. And I appreciate each and every one of them, man, just showing up on the days when we don't win games, the days we win, the good and the bad, the ugly, and they still show up. But for me to get the love of, you know, the fans, when I'm going to the grocery store, picking up some, you know, they recognize. They let me do my thing, holler, you know what I mean? I get a picture, I don't.
Well, dude, I don't know that everybody knows this because I don't know that this was televised, but that Caps game, you're down on the glass, and I think, was it between the second and third period?
It was, yeah.
There was a line of fans that almost from the glass all the way up to the hallway.
Correct.
And you took pictures with everybody, whatever sign or whatever they were asking for. That takes a lot of you, too.
Yeah. Nah, man, it was, you know, I don't got much going on. Me, man, I remember when I was, you know, just starting off. You know, I was still that humble kid, man, and it was nothing for me. I was having fun. To me, it's like, man, these are all the fans that, you know, when I'm in a helmet, these are the same fans that come out and show love. So when I'm out in public just without my helmet, it's, you know, it was like a 10 or 15 minute break, little halftime.
Yeah.
And I just, I looked back and my wife was like, hey, you got to hold on. I said, I took one little chug with him. I'm like, come on, let's do it. You know what I'm saying? Why not? You know, there's a lot of kids, man, just see them smiling and excited, man. That's the reason why I do what I do, man. That's the reason a lot of the guys do what they do. It's just for the next generation, the kids looking up, man, just finding a purpose and a why. Or if they don't have a purpose, you know what I mean? Just a light for them to see, like, okay, you know, and something for them to remember. Because, man, I remember when I was that, I was like, man, I was, when Troy came by and Ray Molung and all them boys came on the island, it's like, man, I remember walking up to them, like, signing. You know what I mean? They had the time. So for me, it's like, man, when I have the time, I'm going to do it. So, yeah.
I love it. Thank you, man.
Pete, appreciate
your time, man.
Thank you.
Frankie, good right Luvu, there. Good stuff, right? He's he's easy to root for, man.
Totally. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, from a football perspective, how do you think the impact of these bigger guys on the D line, and then a guy like Von Miller will impact Luvu.
Well, they're space eaters, and we know Luvu could do multiple things. So to be able to get that happening with him, he's going to have more space to go into. He's more athletic than the guys that's going to be blocking against him, so he's giving more of a one-on-one instead of having guys waiting on him. You know, if those big guys – normally the big guys are taught, when guys try to double you, what do you do? Grab them. Don't let them get away, and now Luvu and Bobby are running. It should be very impactful for them in a positive manner.
I think so too, man. I think it's a big opportunity. And I just –
I like Luvu, man. He's cool as hell, dog.
Totally, man. And I think, you know, a lot of the conversation surrounding the conversation surrounding Luvu and frankly Terry is that, like, oh, you know, what is this front office doing? Like, they identified Luvu last year. He had shown real flashes at Carolina, but he hadn't shown what he showed here. Saw it. Like, for everybody that screamed about Kinlaw, right? What if they see the same thing in Kinlaw that they saw in Luvu?
And what if they can get it out of him? I say that's the main thing. Can they get it out of him? This coaching staff has a familiarity with him, with Kinlaw. And the fact that they brought him back says that they know that there's more tapped in there. If they can go and get it out of him, nothing but great things could happen, dog.
We'll see. I mean, watch a Kinlaw in person, man. That dude is a serious business, man.
Yeah, big boy.
Yeah, and just the length and the arms and the legs, it's going to be fascinating because, you know, right now it's easy to blue sky everything. Like, if Lattimore's really good, then how good could Trey Amos be? All those things. I made a point to try to watch Lattimore run today, and I didn't see him run all that much. It was a lot of, like, short footwork kind of stuff during the DB drills. He was out there in 11s. Some of the stuff that did stand out to me. So Laremy Tunsil got a veteran day off, so it was Andrew Wiley at left tackle, which I support that because at this point that you're focused on making Brandon Coleman a guard.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to, because let's be real, Tunsil's going to get a lot of veteran days off. I don't want to slow down Coleman's development at guard, or not even development, just like his understanding of the position, right? So Wiley is probably going to be a versatile piece for you. So, and he's a veteran that's done it all. So put Wiley at left tackle when Tunsil's down. I also noticed that I think Allegretti was getting a little bit of work at center. Allegretti's another versatile piece that maybe kind of on the wrong side of a starting spot, at least to start. But because he's so versatile, you want him to get all the work.
Yeah. We saw him play last year. And the thing for me is, I know everyone was blaming the running backs last year when things went down, but we all know the offensive line got banged up. They have depth now. They're much better at depth than they were last year. And when you can have your second guy even second line playing, you can still be effective. It does wonders for you.
Yeah. And if you think about it, Wiley and Allegretti, if they end up just being really valuable, versatile backup pieces for you because your overall line got that much better, all those dudes are going to play.
Yeah.
It's the offensive line.
Oh, yeah.
Over under 8.5 different players start on the offensive line. You probably go over.
I'll probably go over.
Trent again, Scott's hell, even another guy.
You may have some plays where they just have more people on the field. There's a such thing as called unbalanced line. And if you have the athleticism, you can use some of your big boys in spaces that'll help you. I wouldn't be surprised. Hell, let's say you bring Wiley back in. Connolly is now your tight end in a certain play. Does that hurt your blocking?
Right.
So, see, I'm always looking for possibilities. If I got offensive linemen, I got a lot of them, I can always use an unbalanced line. I can have, we call it big package, bring in some of the bigger boys instead of a tight end. I got an old lineman who's athletic.
Hell yeah.
And Connolly fits that bill, right?
For sure.
Aiden Ben Sinnott. fake it. Mariota throws it. Caught by Sinnott. Touchdown. The first of his NFL career. Rookie out of Kansas State.
You don't want to redshirt your second-round pick very often, but that's effectively what happened for Ben Sinnott last year with the Washington Commanders. Look at his play time on offense, you know, non-special teams work. It was pretty sparing. Played on 311 snaps, which was 27% of the team's reps, which is more than you may have thought, but a lot of that was in line as a blocker.
Uh-huh.
You look at targets and actual involvement in the passing game, there's not a whole lot on the ledger. Five targets, five catches, 28 yards, averaged about 5.5 yards per catch, and did score that one lone touchdown. Caught up with him at training camp today after what was practice number two of camp and asked Ben Sinnott what he thinks about a rookie year where, yeah, he didn't catch a whole lot of passes, but that had a lot to do with his usage.
I think it was a good year, just being able to have a good amount of playing time that first year and be able to just kind of see where you fall and see where the pieces fit with a really competitive tight end room. But I'm just really looking forward to growing and continuing to build that confidence into year two. Being able to have all that data to look at from year one and just make those improvements as they come.
So when you took that data, as you called it, like what are the things you said, okay, here are a few areas where I really want to get better? Is it physical or
other things? It's physical, it's mental. From a physical aspect, I mean, top of routes and keep my feet on the ground on contact were the two that me and Coach Rye really focused on and what I noticed. And I think from the mental game is just continuing to learn football, knowing the fronts, knowing what coverage is, knowing the adjustments in every play design and just being able to go out there and play fast. And repetition builds that confidence. And I think as I continue to get those reps and through OTAs and through camp, it's just going to continue to stack. And you're going to see improvements. So,
is that one of those things where you feel like you probably know a lot of ball, and then you get to the NFL, and you're like, "Oh my God, there's so many things I had no idea I didn't know."
Yeah, I mean, there's always something to learn. This game is so complex, and just being able to keep up, and the game changes so much from when Zach even started 13 years ago. So, just being able to improvise and adapt, and there's new coverages, there's new fronts, there's different ways these DCs are trying to attack the offense. So. Being able to just continue to learn, it's going to be a never-ending thing, and I'm up for it, and it's been a blessing to be able to have the guys and the knowledge that I have to pick from. So
we didn't see you get overly involved in the passing game last year, but in the preseason, you made some really impressive plays after the catch. And I'm curious, do you feel like you're just an opportunity away from kind of showing what you can do, and that was part of it last year, that you know, in terms of not having a lot of catches or whatever, that basically that you're in a loaded room with a future Hall of Famer.
Yeah, definitely. Opportunities are everything, especially in this league and what system you're in. So I'm looking forward to this year, hopefully get some more opportunities to show what I can do. And I think a big thing is in that preseason, you're having fun and you're wanting to show what you can do. And I think a big part of my game is after the catch. So it's just having opportunities and being able to do what you need to do with the ball and extend plays for your team. So
lastly, now in football, when you're not training, doing things, what are the things that Ben Sinnott does that kind of makes you feel good?
Yeah, I love to golf. I grew up playing. It's one of my favorite hobbies. I love to play the video game and just hanging with my wife, watching a show, just relaxing and staying inside in the summer. Try not to get too in the humidity, but
you're breaking your rule today.
Yeah, exactly. It's different. When it's time to work, it's time to work. But being able to just spend time with my wife and get out on the golf course are my two favorite things.
What's the TV show you guys watch?
We're really into Survivor right now. We have watched a couple different seasons now, and we're trying to just continue to get at it. So we love the show. It's something, the twists and turns, and we really like it.
Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that answer from him when he said, I think a big part of my game is what I do after the catch. It's about having opportunities. Well, he hasn't gotten to show that at all. I go back to the preseason game against the Jets all the time because that was the one time we ever really saw it.
Yeah, we got one case of that.
He caught a ball in space, and he dragged like three dudes with him, and he broke a couple tackles. And quite literally, in my mind, he has lived off of that play since, where I go, I think he could be a pretty good NFL player. It's that snap, that preseason rep.
Yeah.
Because at the tight end position, they've got a guy in Zach Ertz who's the opposite of that. What he's got when he catches it is what he's going to get. He doesn't make the plays after the catch. If he's healthy, he's going to be the targeted key piece at tight end. But if he's not, Sinnott gets more chances. And I think that the stuff we've been asked to see him do, basically, you either don't notice because he's blocking at the line of scrimmage, or it's fairly uninteresting in the passing game. When he can catch the ball in some space, I think that's where he's got his special ability that made him a second-round pick, and we just didn't see any of it last year.
I wonder why. I wonder why there wasn't more emphasis there or usage there. Or because if it's – the way I think of it is every team, every offensive coordinator, every quarterback, et cetera, you're judged on every single thing that you're doing. And you're basically saying, here's our best chance to matriculate the ball, to score, to move, to keep possession, et cetera. We're going to go with our best options. And way more often, their best options didn't include Ben Sinnott. At some point, I understand not every week. If a rookie tight end, when Zach Ertz was healthy, et cetera. But the way it looks to me is John Bates is a better blocker and Zach Ertz is a better receiver. So it doesn't leave much room for that third tight end in the mix. And that's what he was last year, was a third tight end. How much ascension happens this year with both of those guys back? They made it a point of paying pretty good money for John Bates, who's an excellent run blocker. He's basically having a sixth offensive lineman there, and that's kind of the intent. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'd love to see, but that means probably at the expense of Zach Ertz, and I'm not necessarily willing to do that.
All right, joining me right now for the first time of hopefully many times to come, the new head coach of Maryland men's basketball, Buzz Williams. Buzz has won everywhere he's been, Marquette, Virginia Tech, and most recently Texas A&M, 11 NCAA tournament trips in the 17 seasons he spent in Milwaukee, Blacksburg, College Station, four Sweet 16s, an Elite Eight. It's great to have you on the show. You've been here for a few months, and I know it's been tough getting settled, especially with having to remake the whole roster. I just mentioned the three places that you have spent the last 16 to 17 years living in with your family. How has it been so far adjusting to, you know, a much bigger market in the D.C. area?
Yes, sir. Thanks for the opportunity to visit with you. Everything has been good. I think we've been here, well, I've been here a little over 100 days. And to your point, I think we were 6 years in Milwaukee, 5 years in Blacksburg, and 6 years in College Station. My wife and I got married towards the tail end of my career as an assistant. I started as a head coach at the University of New Orleans. So we've kind of lived all over the place. Our children were born. We had four children. They were all born at different stops along the way. It has been a long time since we've lived in a non-college town. And so it's been a good change of pace. Anytime there's transition in jobs, whether you're the head coach or assistant coach, there's a lot of moving parts as it relates to jobs and your staff and the spouses and the children and everything thus far. You never know because you haven't lived it yet, but I think we've tried to make sound decisions personally and sound decisions professionally. But as you mentioned, Kevin, it's all been happening at warp speed, and that's kind of what has happened, not just at Maryland. That happens everywhere now in college athletics within what the model has become. And so to some degree, when I was hired, it was somewhat later in the process than normal. And when there's zero players on the team, that's not a complaint. That was just a reality. And right. How do you make progress relative to not only making decisions for now, but trying to also position yourself as best you can with the future as it relates to the players that are available, whether that be freshmen, whether that be in the portal. And so our staff's done a really good job, in my opinion, of trying to make sure that we find the right people and the right families, but also the right talent. And so we've went at it as hard as we can, and we're thankful to be here. And not everybody has moved yet, but it's getting closer. And once summer session two ends, it'll take a couple of more weeks, but everybody's at different stages. Some of them are still in the hotels. Some of them are fully settled, and if you come to my house and you want to help unpack boxes, There's plenty to do.
One of the things that I remember from your introductory press conference a few months ago, and it was very funny, you were talking about one of your sons who was at, I think it was like East Texas Baptist State, and and you said, for those of you who don't know it, it's in Texas and it's in the eastern part of Texas.
he's reminded me of that many times.
Yeah.
That was a little bit of anxiety on my part. I apologize.
No, that was great.
I was a little tongue-tied on some of the things that I wanted to communicate, and his coach has mentioned that to me a few times, too. Free plug, but yeah, Mason is our youngest son, and he played there last year, and he's lived with us this summer, but we'll be going back. I'll have to move him back to Texas once we finish summer school here. So we tried to see if we could get him in the Division III transfer portal for non-monetary decisions, but for proximity to his mom and dad, and it didn't work. So we'll have to move him back to Texas in a couple of weeks.
Oh, okay. Well, what year is he?
He'll be a sophomore.
Okay.
Yes, so thanks for asking.
Yeah,
he'll be a sophomore.
So hopefully next year you find something much closer. But you mentioned the fact that, you know, you've been in college towns, you know, Blacksburg and College Station. You know, two coaches ago here, Mark Turgeon, he came from College Station to College Park, which was, you know, a massive change. He had been in places like Wichita and Jacksonville before. Have you had a chance to spend time with him or talk to him about the adjustment that he and his wife Ann had to make coming to D.C.?
Yeah, I've talked with Coach a couple of times. I've tried to be respectful to all of the coaches. Obviously, Coach Williams, Coach Drizel's family, Coach Wade. I've tried to, Coach Willard, I've tried to be respectful in honoring all of their work and time that they've given to the institution, while at the same time trying to do the things that I need to do. I have known Coach Turgeon specifically nearly my entire career. Obviously, he replaced Billy Gillespie. I was an assistant for Billy Gillespie, and by the time Coach Turge got to College Station, I had already became a head coach, but a lot of the players that were on his team when he arrived were players that I had recruited or been a part of recruiting. And so I have known Coach Turge forever, and he and I have texted and spoken a few times. I haven't had a chance to see him in person since I have been here, but I have a long list of things to do on my phone. Hopefully that I can knock some of those things off in August, and seeing Coach Turge is one of those things.
How much did you know about Maryland basketball and its tradition and history before taking the job?
Yeah, good question. Transparently, Kevin, I knew probably the top shelf part of it. Most of my career, I have studied coaches more than I have studied programs. I've studied coaches more than I have studied players. Just because I grew up wanting to be a coach and wanting to learn from excellent leaders in all sports, not just in basketball. And so I was more familiar with the coaches at Maryland than I was the program at Maryland. And I understand in some ways you could say that's interconnected. But I have learned more in the 100-plus days that I've been here about Maryland and the program and the support of the program, the importance of the program, and what it means within not only the campus community, but the community and the state and the region. And so I feel very honored and humbled to steward what has been an unbelievable history. I've been reading several books since I've been hired, a little bit on the program, a little bit on more of the former players and former coaches. So I'm more educated than I was the first day that I met you. And so I feel blessed to even be able to be in this office and be in this facility.
You have probably, as you said, over the 100 days, learned a lot more. Is there one thing more than any other thing that when you spend time with Maryland people, they've emphasized to you?
Yeah, good question. I think today is the 112th day.
Okay.
I think what's been emphasized the most is just what a home court advantage Xfinity is. And, you know, that happens at other places, and it sounds like it's very much a part of the Big Ten and the difficulty in winning on the road, maybe more so than other Power Four leagues. That's one of the things on my list that I will study some in August as we start studying some of the Big Ten teams and style of play and some of their rosters. I haven't heard one person that has evidence that has not mentioned, among many things, the one prevailing thought is the advantage of Xfinity, the support, the crowds, the students, the season ticket holders, the longtime season ticket holders, like how important it is and how consistent they are in their support and what a difficult place it is to win at. I mean, I've even had other Big Ten coaches tell me that, and I'm like, well, I appreciate you telling me. Obviously, I haven't been there for a game, so I didn't know, but everybody, that has for sure been a prevailing thought.
Yeah, I asked you that question because I thought that might be the thing, because I was weaned on Maryland basketball. You know, I grew up during the lefty era. We, you know, I was in Cole Fieldhouse. I was there as a student. And I've said for many, many years, in this city, there is no more electric atmosphere and more difficult environment than College Park for a big game. Now, you know, you may not feel it in November and December if a ranked team isn't in there, but for a big game, you know, the ACC coaches, the Big Ten coaches will tell you there wasn't a tougher place to play. I was actually trying to figure it out, and you already answered the question, but I realized that, you know, you got to Virginia Tech as Maryland had just moved to the Big Ten, so you never have at any stop coached against Maryland or coached in College Park.
That's correct. There is some symmetry in some of what you're talking about. A couple of things. When I went to Virginia Tech, the Big East, current Big East, had only been in place for one season. So the year we went to the Elite Eight, which was my fifth year at Marquette, we won, co-shared the Big East regular season championship, and that was when, in essence, that was the last game of that version of the Big East. And then what the Big East became was my last year at Marquette, and that's when all of this was beginning. The right. First round of the shift was happening,
yeah,
as it relates to Maryland, as it relates to Notre Dame, multiple schools, in regards to the shift. And that was when the shift took place. Obviously, it didn't affect me going to the ACC, but my first Division I head coaching game was in the Black Coaches Association tournament, which was at the University of Maryland in 2006, November of 2006.
Okay.
And we played Vermont and Hampton. So I have never coached against,
right,
or at the University of Maryland, but I have played on the University of Maryland's campus, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, in 2006, Xfinity was about 3 years old at that point.
Yeah, I think Coach Williams mentioned was it 2002-03 season, the first season, yeah, of Xfinity?
Yeah, exactly. They won the national championship, right, in the final year at Cole Fieldhouse in 2002, and then Xfinity opened the following year. So the, you know, the fall, early December in of 2002 into 2003. Exactly.
And so the last regular season game at Cole was in the whatever, March of 2002,
and
then,
yeah,
later in that month they won the championship.
Yeah, they crushed Virginia in the final game ever played at Cole won the regular season, and they finished ranked, you know, second or third in the country. They were the one seed in the East, and they went on to win the national championship, you know, beating Kansas in the semis and Indiana in the final. But that game against Virginia, the final game in Cole, was memorable. But about 2 weeks earlier, Coach, they had played Duke in a 1-versus-3 matchup, I think. And it was part of that several-year period where Maryland and Duke may have been the best rivalry in the sport. And the building on that day at Cole, and Maryland won that game, it was insanity. And, you know, as great as Xfinity is, and it's phenomenal, Cole was even better.
And that has been, sorry to interrupt you, that has been something else of our generation, the generations ahead of us. That has been another prevailing thought about Cole Fieldhouse, so much so that this would have been early in my tenure when I was still living in the hotel. Coach Loxley's been an unbelievably kind on-boarder in helping me with all of this. And a couple of times I had mentioned to him, hey, Coach, when nobody's around, can you just, like, can I just have an hour of your time here or there and just talk to me about Maryland, talk to me about the school, talk to me about football, talk just anything. And one of the times that we spent, he came and picked me up at the hotel, and this was, like, late at night, and he's like, hey, I'm going to take you on a tour. Nobody will see us.
Yeah.
And he took me
to Cole.
To Cole Fieldhouse.
Yeah, the football facility.
And I was like, oh, yeah, everybody's been telling me about this. What do they do with this now? And he's like, oh, this is our facility. And I'm like, oh, I didn't know. And, you know, it's like 11 o'clock at night, and it's just Coach and I. And we pull up, and I was like, Coach, this is, like, cool. And, like, I'm old now, so a lot of things I don't say are cool anymore. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, this is like really unique that they have utilized and transformed Cole Fieldhouse into what it is now. Like past, present, and future, a lot of great stories and memories and experiences in that building.
Well, you know, right in the middle of campus sat 14,500. There was no air conditioning, so it would get hot as hell in there, and it was an absolute, you know, snake pit to play in for opponents. And, you know, those were the ACC days and many ACC years in Xfinity but you would walk into that building and you would look down on the arena and there would be the Carolina baby blue uniforms going through layup lines and Maryland on the other end. Lefty really is the man responsible for making college basketball what it is in this area. I had the pleasure of being able to work with Coach Thompson at the radio station for many years. He hosted the show after mine, and Big John used to say, without Lefty, there would have been no Georgetown, because college basketball was nothing in this area until Lefty arrived in 1969 and said he was going to make it the UCLA of the East. But he turned Maryland into an absolute power in the 70s. And, Buzz, he had teams that would have been Final Four teams, but back then, you know, only one team per conference could go to the tournament.
Yeah, good point.
And,
good point.
But, yeah, no, that building hosted Texas Western and Kentucky in the 66 final, which was the first time five black players started for a college basketball team. It was very historic, the place was. But, yes, now it's an incredible football facility for Coach Locks. All right, so you mentioned something already, but how much different has this year been for you in a new place versus your last few stops? Because no chance you ever came into a place and actually had to rebuild the roster from scratch.
Yes, sir. I try to handle all of this in the same way I would handle it publicly or privately and just speak the truth. None of it do I say in a complaining tone. None of it do I say in an arrogant or egotistical way. This is the fifth time I've taken a head coaching job, but it's the first time that I've taken a head coaching job in the era of the portal and NIL.
Right.
And the previous four times and this time, there is no comparison. The only comparison is, yeah, I have to move houses, move states, move my family. That part stays the same. But whether you're in football or basketball or baseball, it's just, it's a different job. It's a different industry. And everybody's trying to figure out, like, okay, how does this work and what's the appropriate way? And nobody necessarily has all the answers because this just happened. And so there's not a lot of data on, okay, what's the best way to go about it? And so, you know, like when the portal began, I didn't take another job. I was already in a job. And one of our thought processes was, well, let's get as many good players as we can from the portal who are the youngest best players so that they will have eligibility remaining. And then as it unfolded, hey, let's make sure we develop great relationships with the young men and their families, because maybe part of the niche we can create is once someone arrives, no matter where they arrive from or what age they are, we want them to stay, and we want to have a plan and a vision for their development that we all are on the same page, the staff, the kids, the players, the families, their coaches, their agents. Because if you're constantly turning over your roster, no matter how good the player or how good your plan is, if it's ever changing relative to the people, that's hard to build continuity. And over the last, since all of this has started, we had among the lower transfer rates in the country. Is that because we had the best players? No. The best coaches? No. But I think the vision and the plan was very similar. And so when you take a job and you've never taken a job in this era of athletics, how do you want to do it? Do you want to sign all players from the portal? Do you want to sign all guys that are going into their senior year? Do you want to sign some freshmen? And so you never know, because it's all happening at warp speed. But we've just tried to maybe diversify as best we can while not sacrificing the character and the work ethic and what we want our program to be about relative to the intangibles. And so where are we? I don't know. Do I think our decision-making matrix, we kind of went about it in a systematic way, even though it was happening really, really fast? I think we did. But there's no way for me to compare, hey, when you left Marquette and went to Virginia Tech, what was it like? And when you left Virginia Tech and went to Texas A&M, what was it like? When you left A&M and came to Maryland, what was it like? Well, it was different than all of them, not because anything is wrong and not because I'm complaining. It's just because that's what the industry has become.
Right. You know, you saying the lowest transfer rates, I think one of the things we as Maryland fans and Maryland people have learned about you over the last couple of months is just how much your players loved playing for you and respected you. And we've seen a lot of those videos and highlights, and some of those players came from Texas A&M with you to Maryland. So, you know, given that you've got essentially 15 new players, I mean, Maryland's team last year, which made it to the Sweet 16, was a completely new team. But do you have a hunch at this point in late July about what you've put together and how it will play out on the floor when you get to November?
Sure. We probably handle the summers, Kevin, a little differently. But I would say that probably all coaches would say the same if asked that question. Maybe how you would utilize the 8 weeks you can work in the summer 10 years ago is different than how you would utilize the summer now. I think when you take a job and you have to put together an entire roster, I think then the summer changes even more. And I don't know if we've went about this the right way. Although We're in week 6 of 8. I kind of think that we have gained some traction. Number one, most importantly, in my opinion, is the relationship category. I want to spend some time with these guys. A lot of the things that players say about me, it's just because they're good people and they're covering up a lot of my deficiencies, to be kind. But I also think there is an element of my willingness to give my time to them to invest in their life. Yeah, every now and then we'll talk about dribbling better or trying to shoot a different ball, but more importantly, who they are as young men and who they're going to become. So I try to invest most of my time in the summer in getting to know who they are, what's important to them, what they like, what they don't like, how can I help them, what are their trigger points, and you can only do that through time. And so we utilized our first 3 weeks. We never practiced 5-on-5 whatsoever, just because I wanted to be in the gym, I wanted to sweat with them, I wanted to actually learn their game. I think part of our jobs as coaches is to put our teams in positions to be successful. And sometimes you can have a system and you always get the best players, and that's okay. I think for the path that I have been on, I think my job is to adjust how we coach based on our personnel. And so the first 3 weeks of June that we worked, it was a lot of skill work with one guy, occasionally with two. Every now and then we would do with three guys. Once every 2 weeks, we would do it with fours, just to, hey, I want to learn who they are. I want to learn their pace. I want to learn their motor. I want to learn how they think. I want to learn how they listen. And then as we have kind of unfolded the month of July, a lot of it's just been discovery. Discovery on, hey, would this work relative to our roster? And so we call them OTAs, just like you hear in the NFL,
right?
Organized team activity. And we just take one portion of what we're thinking about doing on offense and really drill down on that. Clips on that, numbers on that, take notes on that, show them film on that, and then do that, only that aspect on the floor. And if that fleshed out appropriately, go into OTA number two and build on it. If it didn't flesh out the right way, we go into OTA number two and try something else. And so we've had 6 offensive OTAs thus far. We're off on Wednesdays, which is why I'm doing this with you now. And then we start our first defensive OTA tomorrow. And so we'll start at ground zero tomorrow and what we do defensively. And there's a little bit of we're more convicted on what we want to do defensively, not because of our personnel, but just because of how we want to play. But offensively, we're still trying to maybe connect some dots on, does this make sense relative to our roster? Should we expand that? Should we eliminate that? So those 6 OTAs, our guys were great. We made some progress. And then we're going to try to do the same thing as we start defensive OTAs tomorrow.
4 months away from home opener on a Friday night in College Park against Georgetown. I know you don't know a lot. I'm sure you've learned a lot about the history of the Maryland-Georgetown thing, but it looks like finally it's going to become more regular. And, you know, I asked that question not knowing if you would actually be able to, you know, have a hunch at this point. I would guess, correct me if I'm wrong, it probably takes until early in conference schedule to really know what you have, even in a normal year, right?
Yeah, I think again, I hope this is not clipped out and put on the internet where it comes across in the wrong sort of tone of voice or word usage. I think when you have a brand new team, every day is a brand new day.
Yeah, right.
And it's a brand new day, whether it's the summer, it's a brand new day, whether it's the fall, whether it's non-conference, whether it's conference. I think that I like, and I'm getting better at knowing who our group is. And I think one of the things that we've tried to do at appropriate times is try to teach all of us, not just the players, teach everyone on the staff some of the history that you know about the program, that you know about the institution. I think part of what has made Maryland so great for so long from a sustainability standpoint is not just the care and not just the support, but if you talk to this player or this coach from 20 years ago or 10 years ago, there is a connection. And I think we, as all of us are brand new, we need to get involved in understanding the history. I just had lunch. I never eat lunch, and I just had lunch because I had a visitor.
Why don't you eat lunch? They, you just don't make time for it?
Yeah, yes, sir. I don't eat lunch. And so I had two people that I hadn't met that came to campus, and I had lunch with them. And they were telling me, and you probably know this, that this is the first time they believe in at least a decade that Georgetown and Maryland have played. Do you know if that's...
Yeah, that we played in 15 and we played in 16 as part of the Gavitt games. Mark and JT3 scheduled back-to-back years, which was great. And by the way, Maryland won both of those games. They won in College Park in 15 and then in an incredible comeback down like 9 with 2 minutes to go. A guy that was visiting with you the other day, Anthony Cowan, as a freshman, was incredible in the comeback. But yes, and this has been a desire of a lot of sports fans and, of course, college basketball fans in this area that Maryland and Georgetown play every year. There were a lot of reasons. There's a lot of history. Gary will be able to, as you know, Maryland's greatest coach ever, be able to catch you up on all of that history. But there was some bad blood, you know, during those years.
Yeah.
But it's great that it's resuming, and it'll become a top five, top 10 date on the sports calendar in the DMV every year if Maryland and Georgetown play.
Interesting. Thanks for the knowledge there of the history. It's interesting that you would say all that. The guy that I met with, he goes, "Hey, Buzz." He used some different words, but you'll get the gist. He goes, "Buzz, now let me break this down for you." And I go, "Yes, sir." And we're talking about Maryland and Georgetown. And of course, I know that we're playing here and all of that. But I didn't know there was a 10-year gap or 9 years now. And he goes, "Buzz, this is what it is. It's the Cowboys and Redskins on Thanksgiving Day. You know that, don't you?" And I go, "Yes, sir, I grew up on that."
Yeah.
I know they may not play on Thanksgiving Day, and I know they're not called the Redskins anymore, but yes, sir, I remember that. He goes, "That's what it'll be in here on that night at Xfinity." And I go, "Okay, I appreciate that. That helps me. That clues me in." So I have great respect for Coach Cooley. Obviously, we competed against each other and have known each other. I think actually we both became head coaches at the same exact time. And so when he got the job at Fairfield is when I got the job at New Orleans.
Right.
So that'll be great.
That was Buzz Williams with me. There was more to it, and he talked about being a big Cowboys fan, and we talked a little bit about that. You can catch that on my podcast from yesterday. I'll follow up on some of the things he said when we come back. Ben Standing, 10 minutes away from Ashburn.
Good conversation there with Mitch Tischler. If you missed any of that, get on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Like, what was it? Buzzsprout?
Something like that.
Whoever's going to Buzzsprout for their podcast, you can listen to us or wherever you get your podcasts. In just a minute, you're going to hear my conversation with Brian Robinson. A lot of excitement for B-Rob. In the red zone drills today on 4th-and-1, they gave the ball to B-Rob. He scored. It's kind of a cool moment. Here is my conversation with Commanders running back Brian Robinson.
Always appreciate getting to talk to Commanders running back Brian Robinson. How you feeling, man? Year four.
I'm great, man. Feeling better than ever, honestly. My words can't even explain, you know, how much I've progressed, you know, mentally and physically up to this point. So I feel great.
Is it crazy to think how fast time goes that it's already year four?
Hey, man, it's a lot of work that's been put in throughout that time span, you know, so you know, I feel every bit of that time. You know, it still goes fast. You know, it's crazy to sit here and think, like, am I really in year four right now? But I remember being in year one, going through all the crap and sitting right here in the same spot talking to you, and it's crazy how fast this stuff goes.
Seriously. And how different is it now in year two of this offense? Like, last year you were learning. Then you guys have this super successful season, and now you kind of – do you get to expand? Do you have to learn again? What's the differences?
It's really just staying sharp. You know, we pretty much build our foundation, and now it's just, you know, just keeping it formed correctly. And it's I think, you know, it's great for us, not even just me, but us as a unit, coming into a second year, especially guys that have been here. We're more familiar with, you know, what the coaches expect out of us. Our system, and you know, we're more familiar with it, and it's just more comfortable now at this stage of the year, and it's just, we can hit the ground rolling.
What did it mean for you that basically the entire offensive coaching staff came back?
Right. It's great, you know.
But you've had so much turnover over the years.
I was able to really build a great relationship with them starting last year, and just coming into this year, like I said, we've already kind of built that foundation, and now it's just about learning how to really, really take it to that next level. And I feel like, you know, everybody's been on the same page. You know, we, you know, it's a great coaching staff. I was, you know, just thinking about that while I was on the field. I'm like, man, this coaching staff make football, like, actually fun again, you know. So thankful to have, you know, guys like that, you know, being able to coach me every day.
What's A. Lynn mean for you? A guy that's accomplished so much as a back and really knows the game?
Hey, man, A. Lynn mean a lot to me, honestly. I know guys really don't know much about him, but he's a very, you know, great guy with great knowledge and experience, and he's done it at every level. He's very relatable. I feel like I can come to him, I can talk to him about anything. He's been a great person to have in my corner, you know, since he stepped, you know, foot on this campus. You know, he's just been great. You know, his energy stays positive, and you know, I know he wants the best for me, and he's gonna do everything he can to help me.
First half of last year, run game cooked. Then you get some injuries on the O-line. You get a little injured. Second half of the year kind of struggled. What does it mean how they try to really invest in the offensive line this offseason? First round pick is a tackle. You trade for a dude like Tunsil that's accomplished so much in the league. And then, you know, the interior of that line, maybe you shuffle some spots, but should be pretty strong.
I think, you know, they did a great job of, you know, going out and, you know, bringing us in some new pieces and stuff like that. We had an up and down year last year, but you know, we made it work, you know, and just adding just a little juice, a little bit more potential to the line set us up the bar tremendously. And, we know that, the coaches know that, you know, and it's helpful for everything. We need everything. We're trying to win, and you know, we need guys like LT in here to, you know, really help, you know, that O-line stay one, stay a unit, great unit.
Dude, I meant to ask you, what do you think of the new locker rooms?
Locker room sick, man. It kind of remind me of the
Bama,
you know, Bama, and back in school, just having all those luxury locker rooms and stuff like that. But it's nice, man. It's a new environment that allows us to, you know, feel home and in a nice space that it just make you want to work harder. You know, it just make you just want to go and just give back to them for providing us with that, you know, to keep us comfortable and make sure that we feel good every day we come in here. Just make us want to do even more for them, you know.
From an environment here, from your rookie season to now, how different is everything?
Man, it's beautiful. You know, I appreciate everything, you know, that I've been through, the ups and the downs, you know, but just how everything started and just to where it is now, I couldn't be more thankful and appreciative for, you know, everybody who's played a part in helping reshape this place, because right now it's a beautiful place again, you know, and it's a great place to play football, and more people should want to play football here. I love playing football here, you know, and it's, you know, like I said, you know, like everybody who's played a part in it, you know, deserve, you know, their flowers.
Well, you kind of see it when a dude like Von Miller signs here, right? He's got options. He wanted to be here. For you, you talked about you just got to stay healthy. Do you do anything different in the offseason to, I don't know, this year compared to last year to try to make sure you can go just further and further?
I think I just stay the course. You know, I had some unfortunate, you know, things happen to me last year just with my body. It's nothing too serious or nothing that just, I just can't think about what I need to stay on the field. It's nothing. You know, it's just about all the day-by-day things of just making sure that my body feels great. You know, and
what I remember a scene, I can't remember what game it was, middle of the season when you were going through some stuff, and I saw you and DQ out on the field, and he's like, I know you want to go, but I'm putting you down today. Right. What does it mean when a coach is thinking about you long-term and not game-to-game? Man, how tough is that in the moment versus thinking about it in hindsight?
I really appreciate DQ for how he helped me handle just everything I was going through last year. I was really battling some lower extremities, injuries, and he really did a great job of just making sure that he took care of me. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate DQ for that, and I told him how much I thank him for looking out for me, because he knows, like, man, with one leg, I'm out here trying to play, man. I'm out here trying to be available for the team. I want to play. I don't care if they tell me I can play, I'm playing, and I don't care how it's going to make me feel afterwards. I'm still trying to be available and go out there and help the team the best way I can. And DQ just like, man, look, I'm trying to look out for you and the longevity of your career, and I appreciate him for that, because I wasn't even trying to look out for myself. So I really thank DQ and APN for, you know, having my back when it came to that last year.
You run hard. You have like a hard edge about you. Do you allow yourself time to like celebrate your successes? Year four, all the touchdowns, all the yards?
Yeah, actually I have. I sat back this offseason. I just kind of recognized, you know, all the things that I've done up to this point, even though like I have a very, very high standard for myself, and obviously I haven't reached the point that I want to reach in my career. I haven't done or succeeded and accomplished all of my goals. So I try not to get too high. I kind of just stay in my pocket and just continue to strive for what I believe in and what I work for. But I do take time to recognize myself for all the things that I have done up to this point, overcoming some of the things that I have to get back to the point where I'm at now for me to put it all on the line right now. So, man, I appreciate the journey, you know, from the start to now. And it's just every bit of it just make me who I am right now, mentally and physically, and I'm ready for everything that comes with it.
Last one. How excited are you for another year with Jaden at quarterback?
I love JD, man. That's my guy, man. Young guy with juice, man. I love to play with him. You know, so, you know, shit. This smile should tell you how excited I am to play with five. You know, he's gonna take a leap this year because he's not complacent. He's finding new ways to, you know, keep sharpening his sword, and you know, we continuously connecting and building our relationship. You know, going into a year or two together, and I expect us to hit the ground rolling, pick up right where we left off.
Did you speak any Spanish?
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
It's pretty good. You excited for Spain? You ever been?
I've never been.
That's going to be wild.
Never been.
It's going to be wild. It's going to be a fun year. Thank you for the time.
Tobo Chico, you speak any Spanish?
None. Well, okay. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro, cinco, seis, siete, ocho, nueve, diez.
Once?
No idea.
Doce?
Yeah, something like trece. I think catorce.
I think, yeah. Is it trece, catorce, and then it's like diez y cinco, diez y seis?
Yeah, I don't know. That's all I got for you. I can count to 10.
You like listening to B-Rob?
Yeah, I love B-Rob.
Lots of like, man. Hard edge, hard runner.
He's a good dude.
Good person. Signs every autograph. Sunday's going to be madness here. He'll sign every autograph. People are in such a hurry. It's just like the nature of the beast. Like, you started the show with it. Like, the people are in such a hurry to count B-Rob out, and I think it's premature.
Well, and look, I mean, I've been one that's said, like, I didn't necessarily want him being the workhorse, but at the same point, I still think that there is still something in there. And I think if you can just have someone with a little bit more burst is really what I wanted. I want someone that
that's
can
fair.
Give you a little bit of a what do they call them? Sonic and Knuckles in Detroit with Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery. I'm totally fine with B-Rob in that Monty-type role, but you kind of need that Gibbs type. And maybe Eckler can give you that. Maybe there's someone else.
I'm cool with lots of backs. I'm cool
totally
with
true.
Lots of guys being – like, I get
in fantasy, that sucks, trying to figure out who the guy is. But in real football, I think it is the way. Look at how the Dolphins have run the ball. The Niners have run the ball. Like, keep them fresh. Keep throwing different looks, different run types at people. I think people are in far too much of a hurry to think B-Rob doesn't have a lot to give. I believe he does.
It's tough. Sometimes you go back and look, and I don't think he was on his best in the second half of last season. But at the same point, it's not like the O-line was great at the second half of last season either. So,
right.
You know, I think there's – everybody deserves some blame in why that run game wasn't as good in that second half.